the one is great compassion. Yeah, or compassion. So compassion is the wish that self and others are free of suffering. Yeah. So you can see that when you have the heartwarming love that really cares about beings and sees them as lovable, then wishing them to be free of suffering becomes a possibility. And here again, this compassion is generated towards all living beings, not just towards certain of them. So again, we can meditate on compassion, beginning with ourselves and then extending it to friends, to strangers, and to people we don't like. And you know, we can start thinking of the suffering that we have, the misery that we have. And again, don't think just in a small way, you know, like may I be free of cancer and be free of AIDS. You might say, well, what's small like that? I think that's quite big. I want to be free of cancer and free of AIDS, you know. But wish ourselves, may I be free of all the suffering of cyclic existence whatsoever. May I attain full liberation and full enlightenment. Okay, so don't be stingy in your compassion towards yourself. Yeah. What we often call renunciation or the determination to be free is basically compassion for ourselves. It's wishing ourselves to be free of cyclic existence and all the suffering in it. Okay, so let's wish that for ourselves and then let's wish it towards other beings. Okay? So when we're meditating on compassion, extend it like that. And it also helps to remember that other beings at this time have, most others have much greater suffering than we're experiencing. You know, I don't know if you think about this on a daily basis. I try and train my mind to do that. And I'm often very aware. Just, you know, because when I get out of bed, the first thing I do in the morning is I do 3 prostrations. I feel very aware of the fact that I'm able to move my body to do prostrations. Yeah. I'm not always going to have good health, my health good enough to be able to do prostrations. But today, I'm well enough, and my body functions well enough, so that I can offer my respect to the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas. And just really feeling what a great joy and how incredibly fortunate I am to have a body that functions well enough to do that. Okay? And when we sit down to eat breakfast, how incredibly fortunate we are to have breakfast. Yeah? And again, wishing, you know, thinking of the people who are ill and the people who are hungry. Yeah? And think of what that really means in their life. I was reading this morning that in Iraq there's 47 times as many people who died of gunshot wounds in July this year than last year. In Baghdad, I'm sorry. That the morgue has 47 times as many bodies from gunshot wounds. Imagine living in a city where that's going on, okay? And imagine how the people living in that city feel. Wouldn't it be wonderful if they were free of that fear and that threat? Yeah? Wouldn't that be wonderful? And wouldn't it be wonderful if the perpetrators of crimes, be they in Baghdad or in Boise, you know, wouldn't it be wonderful if those people were free of the suffering that led them to act violently towards others? Okay? So we train our mind to do this meditation on compassion. And like I said, in terms of the meditation on love, when we do the meditation on compassion, we also try and extend it beyond just human beings. Now, may animals be free of suffering. May all the sheep that are getting grown to be slaughtered, and all the cows that are being stuffed to get slaughtered, may they be free of suffering. Somebody interviewed me yesterday, somebody from Boise Weekly, and he was telling me that, I don't know when it's going to come out, so I can't tell you, but he was telling me that he's going to, I think it's like a rodeo tonight or sometime this weekend, where these guys are riding on the backs of bulls, and they deliberately inflict great physical pain on the bulls so that they will buck and run around and do all of this stuff. And I was thinking, my goodness, you know, that's somebody's definition of happiness, is to be able to inflict pain on another being that makes that being so angry that you have a good time riding on its back, risking getting trampled underneath them. Yeah. It you know, I mean, I started to think, wow, how funny we human beings are, what we define happiness as. And, you know, think of the suffering of the bull. Yeah, instead of thinking, wow, look at that guy, you know, how macho he is to ride up the bull's back. You know, kind of, what is that poor bull going through right now? Okay? And so here's where it can be really effective, to think about the six realms of existence. Now, I know very often people have trouble thinking of the six realms of existence because we think there's only human beings and at the most animals, you know, but to talk about hungry ghosts and gods and hell realms and demigods, it's like, how do I know those beings exist? And, you know, are they a metaphor or are they real beings like this? Well, you know, I don't think it's, you know, for me that's not an issue. Who cares if it's a metaphor for human suffering or if there's real beings like this? Still, it describes suffering, doesn't it? Doesn't matter whether it's a metaphor or real. It still describes the kind of suffering that living beings experience. Yeah? And so thinking of, you know, let's say beings in the hungry ghost realm that are tormented by their own greed, okay, by their own dissatisfaction, and by their frustration at not getting what they want. Okay, now, you know, the way they're described as is, you know, that they're starving, and so they run here and there looking for food, and, you know, when they get to food, it turns to pus and blood, or even if it doesn't, when it gets to their mouth, it turns to fire, and even if that doesn't happen, their neck is so thin it can't get down, you know. And we go, huh, how am I supposed to believe in beings that look like that? Doesn't matter. Don't get so hung up on the specifics. Some people are hungry ghosts in terms of feeling loved. Think about it. You know, they have such incredible feelings of being unlovable that they go from one person to another person seeking love, craving love, wanting love. As soon as they have a relationship, they, you know, wind up doing something where the relationship has trouble and they break up. We know people like this. Maybe we're one of them. Okay? But it's true, isn't it? You know, people constantly looking for love, but then always things not working out, always problems, always frustrations, always, you know, bad relationships or people cheating on them or, you know, being in love with somebody who is a substance abuser, or, you know, being always together with people who are ill and die or whatever it is, you know? Okay? So if you think of that mental state, or even human beings who live like hungry ghosts, you know. I mean, I can imagine in Afghanistan and Iraq, it's, you know, in Somalia, you know, very many places, you know. It's the hungry ghost mind, isn't it? Looking for something. It's the mind of an alcoholic. Actually, hungry ghost realm is an alcoholic's mind. Yeah? Because you're always looking for something. Where's my satisfaction? Where's my happiness? Go here, go there, do this, do that. Try and get it, you know, and in the meantime, digging yourself into a deeper and deeper hole. That's the hungry ghost mind, isn't it? Yeah. Somebody, any substance abuse, somebody who's a shop until you drop person, that's a hungry ghost mind. Okay? So think about that mental state. Yeah? Think about how that appears in human life. But think about, you know, if that mental state is so strong in a human body, it's very possible that, you know, in terms, if you die and change bodies, that you get a hungry ghost body. Think about it for a little bit, you know. If that way of looking at life is so strong, that hungry ghost mind is so strong when you're a human being, you're so habituated with dissatisfaction and greed and running here and there and craving happiness and frustration and discontent, you know, because you've never found a way to be content with yourself. If that mind is so strong at the time of death, you know, you leave this shell of a body, you jump into another body, what kind of body are you going to get? It's a hungry ghost realm, isn't it? Okay? And if you think like that, there being other realms that we can't see, begins to seem a little bit more feasible. But take the mental state where we're so full of fear and hatred. Okay, now we've had that mental state before, haven't we? Yeah, we've just been so totally out of control with hatred for somebody or with fear of something, totally out of control. We've all had that, haven't we? We like to pretend that we're nice today, you know, sweet Dharma practitioner. But we've all had times we're just totally bananas. Okay? Now imagine, and that's in a human body, that kind of rage. Imagine you die at that moment with that kind of mental state. What kind of body is that mind going to be attracted to? It's a hell of a body, isn't it? Because your body matches your mind at that point. Or imagine somebody who's just like, you know, who's very generous and who's very giving, but they're just totally enveloped in luxury, you know. They might be attracted to the body of a god, okay? They were generous, so they had good karma, so they're going to have sense pleasure deluxe in their next life. But they didn't dedicate it for, you know, spirit to ripen in terms of spiritual progress. So it'll just ripen in terms of a good rebirth and, you know, and then be over. Okay? But, you know, if we think like this, we can begin to get a feeling that there are other realms of existence. Because if you just take that mind, you know, and just change the body, because the body's just a shell, isn't it? You know? And just put that mind, make that... It's like cartoons, you know, but how people who do the cartoons for the paper, how they draw the cartoon figures reflects the state of that person's mind, isn't it? You know, and they're exaggerated, so you have, you know, cartoon figures are very exaggerated, you know. They all look, you know, somewhat human, but they're trying to express through the body what the mind state is. Well, that's the same thing that happens with all these mental states. You know, if you die with that kind of mental state, or if it's very well habituated, your body just matches it. Okay? So think about that and then start generating compassion for the beings who live in that kind of body and that kind of mind and that kind of realm, you know, which is a product of their own karma, a product of their own mental afflictions. Okay? And begin to, you know, generate compassion for them. I mean, that is what enables us to really have compassion for that fly. Okay? Because flies are pretty ignorant. Yeah? So if you're a human being, yeah? If you're a human being, and what you do when you come home from work is you sit down in front of the TV set with a half gallon of ice cream and flick the channels, or with a bag of potato chips and space out and flick the channels, and that's all you do. Isn't that kind of like a fly's mind? Think about it. Think about that mind, okay? That mind is too lazy for the body to even get up and move. It just presses the buttons to flick the channels. The fly's mind is moving just as rapidly, isn't it? It's growing from here to there, from the strawberries to the, you know, whatever it is it flies around on. Never satisfied, totally ignorant. Yeah? And think, you know, we have a precious human life with a human body. Are we making use of it? Or by the way we live our life, do we actually create the cause to be born as a fly in the future? And then what's that mind like? When you're sitting in front of the TV with a bag of potato chips, flicking channels, are you happy? Think about it for a minute. Are you happy? No, you're not happy. Okay. What's going to make you happy? Is sitting there flicking the channels, you know, from one violent, sexy story to another one? Is that going to make you happy? No, what's going to make you happy? No. And I think this is where opening our heart and connecting with living beings comes in, you know, and offering service and being involved in worthwhile activities and worthwhile projects, you know, putting our energy in a good way that helps society, that helps the Dharma, you know, meditating, cultivating a good heart. These are things that bring happiness and internal peace. Okay? So we can begin to see how karma works. You know, how our mental state is reflected in our behavior. That behavior is karma. Yeah? It leaves residual energy. Karmic seeds, you know, the disintegratedness of the action gets left behind. And then that ripens into what we experience and into the body that we're attracted to. Okay? So that process exists for us, it exists for other living beings too. When we really spend some time thinking about it, real compassion can come up because we really begin to understand what suffering is, and we really begin to understand what it means to have a mind under the influence of ignorance, anger, and attachment. Okay, and then, you know, this feeling of may I be free of suffering, may you be free of suffering, it really comes strongly, you know. You don't want to, you know, harm anybody anymore, because we realize that people already, and animals already, everybody already has enough suffering. What's the use of retaliating? Yeah, and instead we really wish for happiness for ourselves and others, and you know, want to put the time and energy into cultivating it. Okay. So, we've gotten through great compassion. I intended to actually get through the other two today too, but I'm slow. So next time. Okay, there's a few minutes for questions? Comments?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. You talked about equanimity and love and loving all people. More or less the same. I was wondering how the relationship that, say, a husband and wife have for each other fit into that. I mean, mm-hmm. Certainly this isn't a place where you generally think of equanimity applying.
Yeah. Okay, so how does a relationship between a husband and wife fit together?
Yeah, how's it different?
Yeah, because it you usually don't think of that in terms of equanimity. I think, you know, also recognizing that the person that you feel so much love towards now hasn't always been in that relationship to you. Okay, that in previous lives they've been a stranger, maybe they've even been an enemy. Okay, so that what that does is that lessens the clinging attachment towards them. Okay, when you lessen the clinging attachment, you're actually able to love them more. Okay, think about that one. When you lessen the clinging attachment, you're able to love them more. Yeah. Because you all know that, you know, when you're married, you love the person and you wish them well. But sometimes you get really mad at them too, don't you? In fact, you probably get madder at them than you get at any stranger. Okay, the anger that you have towards your dear ones comes because of the attachment that you have towards them. Because you've built up expectations, yeah? And when they don't meet your expectations, then you get upset. She can see that the expectations are related to the attachment. If you diminish the attachment, you diminish the expectations, so then you're going to diminish the anger and the hurt, and you'll be able to actually care for them more. Okay? Take some work. And I think also, then you can think that the affection that you have for your spouse, or for your child, for that matter, try and spread that level of affection to other people. Okay? Because our affection isn't a fixed pie that, you know, once it's eaten, it's gone. Okay? Our affection is something that is limitless. So it's not that you have to pour it into just a few people. Try and take it and, you know, share it with others. Yeah, because you're not loving your spouse or your child any less when you develop equanimity and a sense of affection and connectedness with other people. Okay, does that help a bit? Yeah.
I don't know how to pronounce it exactly, but freedom from the cyclic
existence?
Cyclic existence.
Yeah.
Does that mean, maybe you could help me understand what that means better. Does that mean that you're
helping
me?
Okay, so
I'll start this session, you
okay. So you're asking kind of what is cyclic existence and what is freedom from it?
Yeah.
Okay. So cyclic existence, it basically is having a body that gets old and sick and dies, and a mind that's under the control of ignorance, anger, and clinging attachment. Okay? So that's cyclic existence. Cyclic existence is the reality of this, what we're in right now. Okay? Cyclic existence is not the world around us. Okay? Cyclic existence is our body and mind. Yeah?
When you say not the world around us, it's...
Yeah. World around us is not cyclic existence. Yeah. If we have a mind of wisdom, the world around us looks like pure land. Okay. When we generate love and compassion for others, everybody around us looks like a friend. Yeah. But it's the thing of having to take one body and mind, one life after another. That's why it's called cyclic, because it keeps going. Without choice, because we're under the influence of ignorance, okay? And because we have so much attachment to me, I, my, mine, and everything that makes us happy, and so much hostility towards everything that interferes with our happiness. So those three, the ignorance, anger, and attachment, are called the three poisonous minds. As long as those are active in our mind, we are acting, creating karma, okay, which leaves imprints on our mind stream. And at the time of death, these imprints ripen. And even when we're when they ripen at the time of death, they determine what we get reborn as. And when they ripen while we're living, they influence what we experience. Okay, so liberation or freedom from cyclic existence means that we are no longer under the control of these afflicted mental states and the contaminated karma that they've created, but instead we have freedom. Okay, if you're following the Mahayana path, then you don't just want freedom from cyclic existence, but you want full enlightenment. And that is where we generate infinite love and compassion and great resolve and bodhicitta in regards to everybody. And so because of that, we want to become a fully enlightened Buddha so that we'll have the wisdom, compassion, and skill necessary to most effectively be of service and benefit to others. Okay? When you have that, when you're a bodhisattva, a being aspiring for liberation, or for, you know, enlightenment. When you've reached the third level of the bodhisattva path, what's called the path of seeing, at that point, you begin to have some control over where you get reborn as, and you begin to be able to make manifestations, many manifestations of your body, that correspond to what different sentient beings need at different times. Okay? And so this is the advantage of becoming a bodhisattva and later a Buddha, is that you all of a sudden have so much more ability to actually be of direct benefit to others. Okay? So that's what we're aiming for in our path.
Can't help but ask, you say, but later when you become a Buddha, what's the difference between a Buddha and a bodhisattva?
Okay, it's the difference between a doctor and somebody in med school. Okay. That's just an analogy. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So your question is, what is a good mental attitude to have towards people who are doing harmful actions?
And you kind of answered that, but it's still, most of us are repelled and repulsed.
Yeah, we tend to be repelled. One thing, why we're repelled is we confuse the action with the person. And we think that because the person did one action, that is the whole sum of their life. Okay. One of the guys that I wrote to, he's now out, but and I still write to him. He was in for child molesting, and he said the way they treat people in here is that that's all they are, and that one action you've done determines the value of your entire life. And he said, my life is more than that. He said, yes, I did something that was wrong, and I don't ever want to do that again. But that's not the meaning of my and value of my life. Okay? So I think one thing is differentiating between the action and the person. Okay? A second thing is recognizing this whole thing of how things change. And, you know, you had given the example of somebody who mentioned of a child molester. I remember being at a retreat once, and a therapist came to talk to me, and she was telling me about one client who had been continually molested as a child, and how much compassion that she had for this person, until one day he told her that he had molested a child. And then she said it became very difficult to have compassion for him. And I said, why? You know, he's the same, it's a very similar person before he told you that and after he told you that. You know, and isn't there a link between him, you know, mentally being in that kind of distorted state of mind and emotional pain that made him molest somebody? Isn't there a link between his doing that and how he was treated as a child? You know, so isn't he worthy of compassion? So we have to be very clear here, because often we aren't. Having compassion for somebody does not mean that we say that what they do is okay. Okay? Forgiving somebody does not mean that we say that what they did is okay. Okay? Forgiving means that we stop having anger about it. Compassion means that we wish that person to be free of the suffering that caused them to do it. Okay? And I think that's helpful, you know, when we find our mind or our heart closing to other people, you know, and just saying, that person's evil, you know, I would never do anything like that. To stop and ask ourselves, how do I know I would never do anything like that? How do I know? If I grew up in that person's situation, if I were subjected to what they are subjected to. Yeah. If I was put into the situation that they're in, how do I know that I wouldn't do that? We can't be so arrogant. As long as we're under the influence of ignorance and our contaminated karma, we have no security, you know. We can't say, I would never do that, because we've seen in our lives how sometimes our mind just, you know, can be really unruly, you know. We've been very fortunate hopefully, that the damage that we've caused hasn't been too bad. But, you know, we can't say, I'm totally different than that other person. Hmm? Yeah. Okay, let's sit quietly for a few minutes and do a little bit of meditation here. So think about what we've talked about, okay? And even though this is a short meditation, when you go home, yeah, do the meditation on love, do the meditation on compassion as we talked about here, okay?